Hey, Corporate Optometry Nation, this is Dr. Maria Sampolis. Today we're interviewing Dr. Cohen, who is a practitioner in Brooklyn, New York. She earned her doctorate of optometry from Salles University in 2014. She has a background in retail and private practice. She recently took over Pearle Vision and franchise in Park Slope, New York. And she's an active member of the National Optometric Association, serving NAO tutoring committee as well, and want to talk to Dr. Cohen today about Pearle Vision and how she purchased the practice, and get some insight. So thank you, Dr. Cohen, for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, it's an established franchise, so And then you kind of throw in COVID, because you know New York has been hit hard. How have you been kind of adjusting to this with newly purchased practice, and then COVID kind of throws a curveball?
It does. It's probably been the most difficult hump so far in this business ownership ride. We closed on the practice March 2nd, and we closed the doors 2 weeks after. So we had to kind of regroup a bit. So I tried doing a trial opening to see if we could open a little bit, but I mean, things were pretty bad here. Even like within family members and friends who were ill, it just did not feel safe. So we closed down the office for the last 6 weeks. We've only reopened this last week. Dealing with an established practice, this practice was running off of paper charts still, and just I'm sure what was organized chaos to the previous owner was kind of just chaos for me. So just trying to clean out everything, train the staff, switch over to electronic records, establish a communication base with the patients here by changing the voice, the outgoing message on the phone so that we could, mail out any orders, any past orders, or complete contact lens sales and ship them out. So just little things like that, just trying to stay afloat until we could open back up.
How much have you, I'm sure you took measures with PPE. Has that been a big investment for your practice, and just kind of like getting the education that's provided out in the industry during this time as well?
I would say that's actually a benefit of being a franchisee. There were several corporate calls we had to jump on, and the company provided the PPE for us. So that's been a minimal cost for us right now.
That's great. That's good to know. A lot of other corporate entities did the same. So kind of, not have to rush to find things, and they were communicating well. That's great. What have been the pros and cons of buying an established franchise versus like starting a new one?
I think from the start, I always had in mind that if I were to purchase an office, whether private or retail, I would want it to be an office I worked in previously. So that was one goal for me, just so that I wouldn't be a stranger descending on an office. So for me with this office, I would definitely say having an established patient base has been helpful, especially because that patient base is already familiar with me. So it makes the transition a little bit easier. Also, with an established practice, there one of the perks I've had is that I have kind of inherited the insurance panels that were already here. So there are few Pearle Visions that are still providers on the panel for VSP, and I'm still a provider for VSP as well as iMed, so that's a huge boost with the patient base who already they've been coming here and using those insurances. So that's been a huge boost, as well as just having a blueprint, seeing what was done before that hasn't been working, what was working, and kind of being able to move forward that way.
Yeah, insurance panels are a big, sometimes struggle for ODs trying to get on panels. They're saying panels are closed, and That's good that you you know, that's one of the things that when you purchase a practice, you can kind of transfer it over from the past owner to yourself. So that's a benefit right there. What are some other benefits of becoming a franchisee?
A huge benefit would be brand recognition. We are in Brooklyn, New York, and I think on this block alone, there are like 5 different opticals. So there's definitely not a shortage of places to go in New York for an eye exam. And I find that, especially with transplants, you have a lot of people who are not native to New York, and they're here. They tend to lean towards something familiar. So they might have gone to a Pearle Vision back home. They see the name, they recognize the company name, and they, you know, will make the appointment. And they'll tell me, you know, I've always gone to a Pearle Vision, whether it was here or somewhere else. So brand recognition has been a huge one. Certainly having certain tools in place, whether it's the point of sale system, like we mentioned before with the PPE, you have kind of panels in place to help with the license owners nationally. And the communication system that you can use as far as the appointment book and recall system, that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah, the brand recognition and corporate optometry is a key factor to success, I think. When, you know, when I have new patients in my office, you know, they say, you know, I used to go to Sears Optical in Minnesota, and now I'm in Rhode Island, or I was seeing, you know, Four Eyes or in Florida, and now I'm here in Rhode Island. And that is one big thing as well. And I would imagine, you know, in New York City, you get a lot of tourists, you get a lot of people that move there, the brand recognition can be the ultimate factor for success if there's so many other there. And I would assume from, you know, being a franchisee and partnering with Pearle, that they provide marketing tools and they market for your business. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's another one of the tools that's a huge help. So I'm still kind of, that's what I've been doing in this time, is learning all of those different tools that they have. And the marketing is a huge help as far as having established Facebook pages and the marketing for the store, and, you know, the website's already established. They launched now the online contact lens orders, and it's already up and going on our homepage. So that's a big help. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of difficult challenges you faced besides just COVID-19, and just as a new practice owner, a lot of doctors think it's kind of like a lot to take on. They don't have a experience, and that's one of the fears that a lot of doctors, when they go into working for themselves, is not having the confidence that they can do it. What have been some major challenges for you, and how have you overcome them?
Absolutely. I definitely went in very nervous. Even when the previous owner was, you know, he's a friend of mine, he made the offer to buy this practice. I told him no a few times. So I just said, oh, I can't run an office. I have that down to do later, you know. And it was just talking to him one-on-one and speaking with family members and, you know, mentors, just pushing me in this direction to definitely move ahead with it. I would say if you're nervous, you know, find a good circle, find a good community of people to bounce ideas off of. My brother is my business partner in this venture as an investor, and his background really is in accounting and investment banking and real estate. So he's been a huge resource for me. If I didn't have him, I would have sought help elsewhere, you know. But that was one way that I had to overcome it, is find help and get proper advice, you know, talk to my accountant and our lawyer, and just see what would be the best plan of action. And, you know, we've had to kind of regroup a couple of times with COVID to plan out everything, because, you know, we intend to do minor construction and, you know, update the equipment and, you know, can't move as quickly as we initially planned. But I would say kind of just move forward, even with fear and the nervousness, because I definitely was that person who said, no, I don't think I can do this. I can't handle it. And I'm doing it. So I guess I can.
Yeah, of course you can. I appreciate the transparency. I think 99% of the population, ODs out there, think the same way. If they don't say it, then they're lying. When I did my own thing too, I was nervous too. I mean, it's new and it could be, you know, you have some doubts but you know, if other people can do it, why can't I, you know, and you do it and you get some confidence and there are failures and road bumps and you get over it. And COVID is kind of a huge road bump and you've overcome that. Can you tell me what you're doing, how you're managing to stay afloat? I mean, because you had a purchase and trying to pan through this wave.
Yeah. I mean, when we closed, it was such a shock because, you know, it wasn't one of the things that had me just kind of spiraling and getting, you know, you're already nervous, right? We just said you're nervous about going into business. All right, fine. I'm going to push through, do it. Oh, office is closed. All right, wait. I was a complete wreck initially because I said, oh my gosh, it's not as if we have, you know, money to lean on from, you know, years of being in practice or, you know, we're just really getting started. So my brother and I sat down and really examined the budget and we decided that the most important thing would be investing in the electronic records because, you know, if this was an extended closure, we could utilize telemedicine. We could, you know, use the online ordering as a definite way to increase income and train the staff, use this downtime to train the staff. But as well, it was really important to us to provide health plans for the staff. It's not a large staff. It's all three people. But you know, that was important because, you know, we were seeing people getting sick and we didn't want that to be the case for our staff members to, you know, become ill and not have a health plan or life insurance. Those things became important for us to kind of, you know, establish trust in the office that, you know, we care about them and we want them to be well and to also push all of us to work a little bit harder to train and transition to what would become our new normal.
Yeah. The EMR system is one of the key backbones to a practice. And a lot of doctors don't have it because they think of it cost, but there's a lot of things, like you said, that can be utilized from it and even communication during this time.
Yes.
And, but even so, if you think about the disruptors in the industry, a lot of doctors, they see these patients 20 minutes a year and they think they're done and they just have them back. But within the year, they have all this disruptors, all this information that is provided them by outside resources on an eye exam that might not be true, and you know where they can purchase contacts and things like that. So if you have a communication system that you can just email and just give them good information that is valuable to them, whether it's just yearly eye exam information, diabetic eye exam, glaucoma, why you're doing an eye exam, that is important too. So just that communication, that email, that text, something like that. And you know, I have the communication system that I use. I had a patient I haven't seen in a while and was able to reactivate them because it sent them a text message saying happy birthday. And they said, that's why they're back. Yes. They got on that.
Yes.
So it's just that communication and, you know, the system does it itself. So, and it also saves time for my staff to do other things instead of doing the recalls when the system does it.
Absolutely.
So I think it's important. Yeah. So I think doctors just need to think outside the box and think of that more value than what the cost is. So I think that's important as well.
100% agree.
What are some measured strategies? Yeah. What are some measurement strategies you've taken to operate post-COVID, during post-COVID?
Yesterday was 1 week since we opened back up. Just what you mentioned, the communication has been key. as far as reaching out and, you know, returning phone calls on the messages and setting up the appointment book for, you know, temporary hours. We're only open right now 3 days. We hope to move, you know, to about 5 days a week with temporary hours, but we call each patient beforehand to let them know that, to screen their health also, see if they've traveled, to see if they've been ill recently, are they experiencing certain symptoms. We let them know that they cannot come in without a mask on, that hands must be washed as soon as they come in. And we do the sanitation of the exam room in between each patient and keeping, you know, keeping the flow of patients in the office to a minimum. If they're trying on frames, they have to put them in a bin so we can sanitize the frames. So it's a longer process, but it's necessary. And I think the patients appreciate it as well, because we do that phone call beforehand, one-on-one, in case they have questions. And we kind of go through it again as they're in here, and, you know, we keep the flow going. So it's so far it's been working well. You know, it's important to us here, especially being in New York, to minimize the contact, or, you know, definitely not going against the social distancing, which is hard because real estate in New York, you know, the office space is not huge, but
it's close.
You know, yeah. But yeah, those are some of the measures we've definitely been moving forward with.
Yeah, those measures are important because you're, I mean, being a new practice owner, you want to make sure that, you know, patients trust you and that you're keeping them safe. So that's important. How many patients are you seeing per hour during this pandemic?
So far, it's been no more than two. I've been, no more than two. It's really hard otherwise, because like I said, our office is small. So we don't really have a waiting room. It's not like it's separated where maybe we could set up social distancing in the waiting room. No, that is not happening. So no more than two patients an hour.
Okay. Yeah. I did a study in the corporate optometry group, and 58% are doing two patients per hour.
I saw that. I don't see how it could be normal. Anything else.
Do you lock the door and then let people in and out because you have no waiting room?
Absolutely. The door is locked. I'm tempted to put up a velvet rope or something, but it's definitely.
Sure. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. No, you have people who hang on the door,
Patients have been responsive, right? I mean, they've been respectful and follow the rules.
Most of them. You always have those outliers, right? Who do not understand they can't do what they want to do. But I would say for the most part, people have been appreciative and compliant.
Yeah, it's your office, your rules, and you're trying to keep your patients and your staff and yourself safe so you can continue to provide care. So they have to follow the rules. I've had one patient that forgot a mask, but we have some surgical masks on hand as well. And I've done that. For your office, how do you do? I know all the contacts are mailed out and you're in New York, so might not be a lot of curbside pickup, but how do you give the glasses? How do you dispense?
I actually love that you mentioned that. So I was on a LO corporate conference call, and everyone was talking about curbside pickup, and there is absolutely no way to do curbside pickup at our location. We are like in a historical building with apartments above us, a bodega next door. Like, there's no way you can do that. That's been hilarious to me when people bring that up. Mainly, we've been shipping out glasses as well if the patient requests it. A lot of our established patients aren't even here. They're still, you know, out of state, you know, to kind of stay away from the whole pandemic. And we charge a minimal shipping fee to wherever they are and send out the glasses, and just as we've been doing with the contact lenses.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense for New York, because a lot of people will commute in and then probably do their business there as well as an exam. So what do you wish that you knew when you started?
What do I wish I knew? I would say that, kind of touching on what we talked about before, that it's possible. and that I'm capable. I think throughout school, I had it in my mind that I would never own a practice. I wanted to open the door, show up, see patients, thank you very much, and go home. And that would be it. And I think doing that for several years, it started to weigh on me. And I realized I wasn't happy, but I was scared to move forward because I said, oh, I don't know if I can really run an office on my own. So knowing that that is possible, and it's more attainable than you think it is if you're feeling afraid to do it. So I'm grateful for the experience I had as an independent OD or an employee of other practices, because I definitely learned from that experience. But I wish I had been more aware of my capabilities sooner.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And I think it's just a confidence thing and a little bit of motivation. Sometimes you just need a little bit of push. I think any OD that wants to do it could be successful. It's putting in the time. And then it gets easier. How do you balance, you know, from being a doctor and a business owner, kind of wearing multiple hats, and then, you know, taking on a dispensary too? Because a lot of ODs will just do their practice, not worry about that. How do you balance all that?
I mean, especially in this time, I feel like I was in a boot camp. So I couldn't have the staff in here for a bit. And I have so much more respect for the front desk now with dispensing and everything else. But for me, even now, I'm a morning person. So I don't try to circumvent that fact. I don't stay here late ever. I would rather come in early and just double check the closing from the day before and catch up on any billing I'm behind, and you know, anything else that I see that needs to be done, I have it written down so that when the staff does come in, I can delegate certain tasks so that I can get what I need to get done, you know? So that's been the best way in sticking to who I am as a person. Some people, they're evening people, they want to stay in, but as soon as I finish seeing the last patient, I'm ready to go. I'd rather just wrap up what I need to wrap up for the day, and then the next morning just kind of regroup and plan out the day. That's been my best plan.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've always said about when you're self-employed. You kind of make your own schedule, figure out what you want, and maybe and change it. And I think that's been a huge plus, you know, for me with having a family. I kind of figure out, you know, because the schedule can change weekly, and sometimes I'm working now with COVID, I'm working nights and long weekends because of my homeschooling.
Yeah,
but you can do that. Yeah. But if you're working for somebody else, and say, you know, we need these hours, and then, you know, I have no, at this point all daycares are closed. How do you figure that out? And I think that's one of the things, is you kind of do it how you want, as long as it's beneficial for your patients, and you're making an income that's supporting you and your family. You do what you want. And I think that's one of the big pluses for as a business owner that I've always seen. And as a female, to be able to do that. A lot of doctors think, oh, you know, I'm going to have a family. Young females, I'm going to have a family and I can't do it. You can do this. You can do it. Sometimes it doesn't look pretty, but you can do it. You just have to figure out how you want it. And patients will work around you, if they've been established patients. I mean, you get that patient that wants a certain time, and that's fine. But you can figure it out. And I think that's what a big myth out there is, that a female having a family can't do this. And I think they can.
Oh, yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because I would say that even though I was afraid of going on my own, one of the reasons I ever wanted to do optometry, I said, well, one day I want a family and I want to be able to come in a certain number of days and be home with my family. I'm not really sure how I intended to marry that to the idea of, oh, I can't ever run a practice, but that was always one of the motivating factors for me. I would see back when I would tech female ODs, that's what they did, you know, okay, I have to go pick up my kids, I'm done for the day, and they leave. And I wanted that freedom, that independence. So that's definitely a huge benefit. I mean, I still don't have kids yet, but it's a huge benefit to set my own schedule in that way and plan for the future, with those type of benefits.
Of course, yeah. What are some keys to running a successful practice? I get a lot of young ODs say, what's the secret sauce to doing it? You know, what are some of the things that you found?
I feel like I'm still learning. So I would say one is to not assume you know everything and be open to continuous education and advice from others. So that's huge. If you go in feeling like you know everything, you're probably missing quite a bit from from that sauce. Another thing would be good accounting. If you're not learning good accounting, if you don't have a good accountant, good financial skills, get them, learn them. I don't see how you can plan to have a successful practice without good money management skills. And communication is huge with staff, huge with business partners, huge with patients. So if anything, I know my staff probably gets tired of me, but I always tell them, I want you to know what my expectations are. I want you to know what's going on. So you, just as I'm being open with you, I need you to return that to me. I don't want to know that there's a problem later on and we're not addressing it. With patients, you know, they, one of the things that will really upset patients is not having that open communication, not hearing back from the office if they had a question, or not knowing what the updated hours are, or, you know, can I get my glasses shipped to me? And, you know, and definitely internally, if you have a business partner, you want to keep the lines of communication open, where you stand financially, where, you know, who's unhappy, who's happy, that type of thing. So I would say being open to learning, good money management, and great communication skills.
Yeah, those are great things. You know, as a leader in your practice, a lot of times don't see a leader in your practice, you need to continue to learn. You're always learning. You never know everything. And if you do, that's a bad sign for your business, because you're not expanding, you're not changing, you're not adapting, because the industry is changing. And then communication with your patients is super important for customer service, but also to keep them loyal. Because if they're just getting routine exams, what are you doing differently than maybe getting an online exam? I mean, these are all in getting your staff involved. Because if your staff knows they can handle problems sooner, keep patients happy, but also you're educating them on stuff so they can do a better job efficiently. But also, if you grow, they grow, right? So if you present it to them as our practice is growing, you're going to get an incentive from it, whatever the incentive is. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's a different position. Whatever the case is, everyone's motivated differently. Those are great takeaways. And, you know, I'll talk to some doctors and they're older and, you know, and they haven't done the next step to kind of grow. And they're kind of frustrated saying, you know, the industry is stagnant. But there's plenty of opportunities. They just need to continue to evolve and grow. And, you know, I get it. As life changes, things get busy, it's hard to kind of stay afloat and on stuff. But, you know, there is opportunities there. And whether it's colleagues, you know, being, you know, and also, you know, trade shows. But like an accountant's important to knowing certain things. But I've also talked to a lot of doctors during this pandemic, and there's no cash reserves. I mean, there should be at least 3 to 4 months of cash reserves. Exactly. And a lot of doctors are making very good income, and they're not saving their money. I mean, I've talked to a lot of new grads and I say, look, save your money. I mean, you're going to make good money, pay off your loans, you know, buy a house. The Mercedes can wait. You don't need a Mercedes. You know, do that. And, these are great points. These are great points because it's true. And you know, as your career goes on, there's different things, but also, you know, when you have a family, there's different expenses and there's different things. So, these are great points, especially, you know, a downtime like COVID. If you're financially secure, you're not stressing out and you're using this as an opportunity like you have to find, you know, opportunities within it to, you know, get EMR, to educate, to use it on your downtime. So when you're back up and running, it kind of going smoothly. So I think that's great advice.
Thank you. I agree with what you said with the students for sure, because that's one of the things that confused me. I saw, you know, some doctors who I would expect would be in a better position during COVID. I was confused. I said, well, I've only been open 2 weeks. You've been in practice for years. Like, where are your savings? Because I felt like at a disadvantage, like, oh my gosh, if I had just been open a little bit longer, at least I'd have some savings to fall back on. And what you said is so correct. I had a meeting with the staff yesterday, you know, and I'm very blunt. So I said, you know, I notice you guys are buying lunch every day. And that's absolutely insane to me that you are spending money every single day, all three meals, when we're on a fixed budget. Like this, there's no magical money falling down from the sky. And we don't know what's going to happen with COVID in the future. So whether or not, I feel that everybody needs to know, like, you know, do you have that financial literacy to understand that not just in the time of COVID, but going forward, you really should know where your money stands and put it where it's most important. Yes, like you said, it's different if you have a family, but, you know, as a business owner, that is your job. You know, you're not just looking out for yourself. You're looking out for your staff as well.
That's right. Yeah. And they're trusting that you're doing everything right if they're putting their time and their and to be with you as well. And because they're a valuable part of your business as the front desk staff. I'll tell you, you could be the best doctor, and I've heard patients walk out because the front desk was rude or incompetent. So that's important too. And, you know, success for me within my practice, I'm not going to say it's been me. You know, it's the people around me that have helped me, you know, whether in my private practice or in my corporate practice. I have both. But I'll say, you know, I could be part of it, but I don't grow without them and working together. So, and I think that's been a good thing for me is the people around me, because it doesn't matter if you're the doctor or the person that's cleaning the bathrooms. It's all a collaborative thing. And if you have that mentality, you don't have that mentality, then you don't grow. So.
You don't, yeah.
You know, I've been pretty happy and successful because, you know, if people are working well and they feel like they're part of something, they're going to work harder, and you can trust them, and they'll go the extra mile. So
exactly.
That's been, What are three things that you would recommend an aspiring franchisee to keep in mind? It's franchisee is not a lot of information out there for ODs.
I would say do your research. I actually, you know, if you had asked me, I would say even 6 months ago, you know, was I excited about the idea of owning a retail practice? The answer would have been no, because I assumed it was going to be like a chokehold of some sort. But as a licensed owner, you know, not only am I in charge of like the exams, but as well as the optical. And that's been a huge benefit. I would say, you know, research your brand. You know, I don't understand going into a franchise business for a company you don't like. Read up on the company first and make sure that it's something that you are okay with. If they don't stand for certain things, if there are things in the fine print that you don't really feel, you know, okay about, that should not be the company you go with. So yeah, I would say do your research on different companies. Do your research on the brand. Know your brand. I have an issue with you know, being in an office. How are you going to sell or provide feedback to patients and customers if you don't even know the brand? So that's important. Understanding that and creating a plan. I always like having a plan. It may not go as you had it initially set, but creating like a 5 to 10 year plan, always have your goals. Where do you want to see this practice in 5 years? Where do you want to see it in 10 years? And I think with that, you want to know, how are you adding to this corporate setting? Because yes, you have the corporate side of it, but the beauty is that you are within it a private practice, and you have to add your personality and your skills to that corporate setting. So how would you implement that? What are your plans for the future? How to grow? You know, you mentioned earlier about older ODs who feel like the industry is changing. But really, is it that the industry is changing or that you're remaining stagnant? Evolution is necessary, right, in any field. And if you're not growing or open to evolving, you know, what is it that you really intend to do? You must just want to retire. People change, and you have to kind of change. You don't have to change with them, but I think you have to move in a way that you can adapt to certain changes. So I would say, you know, doing your research on what it is you want, understanding your brand, and setting goals that allow you to adapt and evolve.
No, those are all great points. I think we're on the same wavelength. It's important. So I think it's just, you know, injecting that confidence to a lot of ODs and, you know, saying it can be done. One final question here. When, you know, you had a plan, you have a 10-year plan. When you looked at acquiring this franchise, what are some things that you looked at? And I'm sure you had a family member or your accountant lawyer help you. What are some things that you look for besides just the brand, you know, to make sure the financials were right and this was the right practice for you and that you were making the right decision?
Yeah. One big thing would be location. Like I said, on the block itself, we have several obstacles, but we're on a corner. We're right on a busy corner, the intersection where we are. It's all glass. The whole store, you can look inside, and there's a lot of foot traffic and a lot of vehicles who pass by. So I realized that I could mention it to anybody. And it's, oh yeah, I know the big one on the corner of Union and 7th. Yeah, I know that store. It immediately just stands out to people. And that was a huge benefit looking at the neighborhood. I've worked in offices where you had like multiple gates to lock up. Like if you get stuck inside, it is Fort Knox, you know, just based on the neighborhood. And with this one, it's really minimal. Of course, we were secured, but, you know, you don't have the multiple gates or you're not worried about leaving a certain time of the day. You know, the neighborhood was pretty or is pretty safe right now. And that's a huge benefit as well. You know, looking at, you know, economics, what's the socioeconomic status of your patient base? That helps, right? Especially in a time like this, mm-hmm. you know, will that help you stay afloat? That was a big benefit as well. And, looking at speaking to corporate, you know, corporate actually had certain projections for this store and saw where it could grow and expand. You know, if you're looking at the fact, like I said before, you can look at the blueprint of what was already here. You see the numbers and you say, okay, if they are making this with paper charts and minimal medical exams and, you know, no type of social media presence or, you know, utilization of the marketing, what could be done in 5-10 years if you really I don't want to say manipulate, but use those tools to
put the pedal to the metal.
Put
the pedal to the metal. Yeah. These are all great points. Yeah. I mean, a lot of doctors don't have a website, don't do social media, don't utilize what corporate can give you. And then, you know, even without a franchise, but like, projections, there's projections in, you know, LensCrafters or Walmart. You know, understand what they're doing, what the percentage is, what are they making in the optical side? And you're right. I mean, the economics of the patients are important. Location's important. The image, you said it's glass so they can see inside. There's traffic. It stands out. These are all great points. A lot of doctors, you know, overlook or don't know. So these are all great points. And I appreciate your time today, Dr. Cohen. Thank you so much for, you know, joining the podcast, giving us an insight on COVID and New York, how New York's been hard hit. You know, franchisee new to it, and kind of, you know, going, you know, still going hard at this. There's a lot of doctors that were looking at purchasing a practice, you know, pre-COVID, post, are all holding back, and you know, thank you so much for giving us the motivation to kind of keep forward, and just to say, you know, it's just part time, this COVID thing. It's just a setback, and the future is bright for optometry.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate your time and for having me here. It definitely is temporary. I think it goes back to what we said. If you can manage your money now, you can manage your money when there is more of a flow of income, right? You shouldn't want to invest when things look great, because when you can survive in the rough times, then you know for sure that you can do anything going forward.
That's right. That's correct. You have a good mindset, and I think a lot of ODs would have get a lot of out of this podcast. If somebody wanted to contact you, could you provide an email or a number or something that they can contact you?
Sure. It is my initial, so c.f.cohen84@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. You can contact Dr. Cohen, or you can also private message her. She joined the Facebook group as well. And thank you for listening.